Welcome back to Your Average Witch, where every Tuesday we talk about witch life, witch stories, and sometimes a little witchcraft. This episode of Your Average Witch is brought to you by Beyond the Sage. If you're like most witches, you love tea. Step into the mystical world of this witchcraft and tea e-shop, where you'll find an array of divine offerings to nourish your mind, body, and spirit. Beyond the Sage offers a wide range of divination tools, spell candles, and unique gifts, all aimed at empowering your spiritual journey. In addition to their magical offerings, shop creator Danny is proud to offer homeopathic remedy options carefully crafted to support your health and well-being. Every product in the shop is made with organic, ethically sourced, or homegrown ingredients, ensuring that you receive only the finest quality goods. And to protect the environment, Danny is committed to upcycling, recycling, and avoiding plastics wherever possible. So if you're seeking lucid dreaming, healthy detoxification, trippy teas, safe weight loss, or unique spiritual tools and remedies, look no further. Visit the shop at their link tree at linktr.ee/beyondthesage and let Danny guide you on your journey to enchantment and enlightenment. Embrace the magic and venture beyond the sage. Listeners of Your Average Witch can take 25% off your order of $25 or more using code AVERAGEWITCH with no space in the middle. In this episode, I'm talking with Mahegan of Kitchen Toad. Mahegan is a blogger, a cunning person, and a folk witch. We talked about growing up woo, being an entrepreneur at a young age, and why witches need to be multilingual. I'm also excited to announce that Mahegan is starting their own podcast, and the first episode comes out tomorrow. Check out Sat Upon a Toadstool, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on Mahegan's website, kitchentoad.com. Now let's get to the stories. Mahegan, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Can you please introduce yourself and let everybody know who you are and what you do and where they can find you?
Yes, my name is Mahegan St. Pierre. I run a small shop named Kitchen Toad. I'm mostly on Instagram, which is Instagram/KitchenToad, where I basically sell magical wares. I offer services. I do divination and spell work and consultations, talismanic consecration, stuff like that. And I also write on the Kitchen Toad blog and have a bunch of fun projects that are all witchcraft and occult and folk magic related.
I am really excited to talk to you. And I know one of my friends is super excited that I'm talking to you. When I told her I was talking to you this morning, she was like, yes!
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Me too. Can you please tell me what it means to you when you call yourself a witch?
Yeah, this is something I talk about quite a bit. To me, witchcraft is about the relationship that we hold with the others, as in capital O, spirits and fae and land spirits and gods and whatever you want to call it. And is really the process of mediating between those two realms and becoming somewhat othered through the process of relationship with spirit.
I love the otherness part that nearly everybody says. I love that about us. Would you say you have a family history with witchcraft or magical practice, even if your family does not use that term?
A little bit. My family is very spiritual. We're like good old Catholics, like pretty much everyone in Quebec, like culturally Catholic. But the more like time goes on and the more my grandfather tries to evangelize me, the more what he says sounds like spiritism and like, because, you know, he believes in God and angels and saints and all that, but he also believes in fairies and demons and that spirits of the dead can come back to haunt you. And, like, his worldview through Catholicism is very folksy. And he's very much the one that kind of shaped my family's spiritual background. He's big into, like, the law of attraction and, like, The Secret and, you know, all those fun things that came out in the 60s. And my mom was very, very spiritual. We're half indigenous, and so I grew up with my mom doing ceremonies and stuff like that, because she's a reconstructionist. She's an archaeologist specializing in Indigenous studies through a Reconstruction-y kind of vibe. Like, we basically had a whole, like, Native American village in our backyard and did animation and stuff like that. So I grew up with a sweat lodge and a longhouse and all the fun stuff. And then we've always been very, very woo-woo. My mom was, like, a little bit into, like, crystals and gnomes and undines and, like, elemental spirits. And I was very much taught growing up, like, you pray to God, sure, but you also pray to the trees and to the rocks and to the rivers. And, like, there's always something that can hear you. So the spiritual background is not defined as witchcraft per se, but it is very, it was a very big part of my life growing up.
Sounds very witch adjacent, at least.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Can you introduce us to your practice, like anything that you do regularly that you'll share?
Mm-hmm. My main focus within my craft is very much on land veneration. And I do include like the celestial realm into the land, because it's with a capital L, we're talking like spirits of what's around you and what you can see and what you can interact with. I'm very big into ancestor veneration, whether that's my own bloodline or if it's mythic ancestors. My family name is Saint Pierre, which is Saint Peter. And so I do venerate him in my practice, through that lens. Venerating the local dead as well, the people that came before us and built the places that we inhabitate and the infrastructure and the culture. And otherwise I do a lot of in herbalism. I actually got into magic proper through my kind of mix of herbalism and like spirituality growing up. My mother was always very granola and like crunchy. We always did like herbal remedies and homeopathic stuff. And then I started studying it when I was like 11, 12 is when I started being very interested in it. And that's what led me into witchcraft proper. So I have a big background in herbalism and holistic wellness and nutrition and all those kinds of things.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Would you say that witchcraft changed your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not really someone who got into it because it was interesting to me. It was always like a thing that existed and I knew was an option and I knew was applicable to certain situations. And then I was forced into a corner, essentially, where I was very powerless and desperate for something to change. And so that's how I got into the practice of everything. And it definitely had some very big impacts at that time. And then that's kind of what got me rolling into it. And it really allowed me to take back power within my life and take back agency and build on confidence and really develop my personality and like strap up a little bit for life. Because I feel like if you're going to go into the woods in the dark all alone to like conjure terrifying, ineffable names and spirits, like you really got to be able to like walk the walk and talk the talk in your daily life as well. I'm not going to go confront something that I can't see and that can ruin my life and then also be afraid of my boss, you know?
Yes.
Like those two are a little hard to do at the same time, I think.
What would you say is the biggest motivator in your practice? And has it changed since you first started?
Definitely. Yeah, it's changed quite a bit. Because initially, like I got into it really for the power and the agency and the ability to change my circumstances. My background's a little rock and roll, a little roller coaster-y, and so it really helped stabilize my life. And then once I kind of was able to settle down a little bit and calm down and, you know, recuperate from all the craziness, I started Kitchen Toad, and now my focus is very much on building community and then serving the community and respecting the legacy of magical service workers through the ages and cunning folk and herbalists and pretty much anyone who had a part to play in their community's spiritual life and belief.
Can you share how you decided on that name?
Oh, I feel like I've mentioned this before. It was supposed to be a food blog. I moved to Vancouver when I was like a teenager, and I was like really inspired by the market scene there. There's a beautiful market on Granville Island, and they sell like local goods and vegetables. And BC is wonderful because there's like produce year round. It's lovely. And I'm big into food. And so I was very inspired by that. And I like threw myself into this crazy project where I was like, I'm going to buy a domain and I'm going to build a website and start a food blog and da 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 da. And then I didn't do it. And I was like stuck with this like $700 domain that I bought for like 10 years. And I was like, what am I going to do with this? And then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, you know, it's kind of catchy. It's kind of a good brand name. So when I started up the business, I was just like, well, we're just going to call it that. It doesn't really make any sense. But, you know, I like to think that maybe
it does,
I'm
though.
The food in the kitchen, you know?
It super makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Toads are super witchy.
They are. Yeah. It used to be, I was blogging under the Frogs Apothecary for a really long time. It was always frogs for me. It was never like toads, but then I was like, toad kind of sounds witchier and more like brandy. I wish it was like some kind of like toads are super sacred to me and like da da da. But, no, it was a business decision fully.
I really, that's kind of why my business name is what it is. Because yeah. I like the way sounds. I like the way things sound when they come out of your mouth. That's why Clever Kim's Curios is what it is. Because I just like the sounds.
Good alliteration, yeah.
Exactly. What would you say is your biggest struggle when it comes to your practice?
For a long time, I think it was imposter syndrome. I think that's everyone's story. You know, when you're dealing with the invisible and like things that most of society is going to tell you isn't real, or that you're like mentally ill or, you know, crazy or whatever, it can get really annoying and really difficult to kind of parse through what is spirits and what is mental illness and what is stress and what is, you know, your own inner critic, and conscience and like all those things, and differentiating between those things. I'm someone who took a really long time to develop the psychic senses of like mediumship and being able to communicate with spirits more openly and differentiate between, what was me and what was spirit and what was intuition and what was, you know, outside influence and stuff like that. And so that was a very big struggle for me. I kind of just like kept powering through and then had like multiple crisis of faith throughout the days. And then once I kind of settled into like a good routine of developing those skills and differentiating what was what, and really came into my own in my practice and stopped really going from system to system. I mean, I did everything. I went from like traditional witchcraft to hoodoo to chaos magic to tantra Hecate stuff, through like Jason Miller's course, through ceremonial magic, a bunch of stuff, and never really found, like, settled onto a personal practice until maybe 5 years ago. And then at that point things kind of fell into place. And I would say nowadays my biggest struggle is probably balancing what is work and what is passion in my practice. Because when your spirituality is a business and is also in the public eye, it can be very tempting to sell out or to, you know, if I wanted to one day, like I could totally turn around and start charging like $700 for a 6-week course that says very basic information and sells you a bunch of products. But I have too much integrity for that. And so I am always like, do I make a lot of money or do I stick to my guns and like be a good person? And it's like navigating the whole business world is crazy, especially in this community where I think people are very cutthroat between what is business and what is friendship and what is magic and what is, you know, community and what isn't community. And then everything gets very blurry very fast. Yeah, it's a difficult market for sure.
I bet part of that is because we've been on the outside for so long that when we find community, even if we're paying for it, we latch on. At least that's my experience.
Definitely. There's a lot of cult leaders hiding in plain sight.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like you don't have so much of an issue with imposter syndrome anymore. When you did, how did you sort of pull yourself out of that?
Delusion. Or did you?
Oh, good. Me too.
Straight up, just pretending like I didn't hear my little imposter voice. And also, well, I do have like the very special position that like throughout my entire magical career, I've been blogging. I literally, if you go back in the internet archives, I'm not going to tell y'all where to go because I don't want anyone finding that. But yeah, I have a very strong paper trace. You can see like the very first spells that I've ever performed online.
That's terrifying to think of.
Like, yeah. So everything
I don't
that
want
I've
people
done,
to see that.
All the misinformation that I used to incorporate and all of the bad opinions that I used to have.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
And photos of things that shouldn't have been taken. And anyways, you can find all of that. And so, you know, I did get the chance that I've always had people to discuss online and also people to like get, like kick my ass a little bit. I think that like having people in your community point out what you're doing wrong or what you're spewing bullshit about. Can I swear on this podcast?
Hell yes.
Okay, awesome. I cuss like a sailor.
Me too.
Perfect. So yeah, you know, having people in your community that are older and more experienced that can really tell you like, hey, what you're saying is wrong. And you're kind of running your mouth for no reason. Maybe like look into that is really good. And so that helped me because in my mind, I was like, if I can be wrong about things, that means there's certain ways to do things right. So it can't all be false, you know? So that helped a lot. And then I've also always been providing services. I practiced for maybe like 2-3 years without telling anyone. And then after that, I was, already like performing spells on behalf of friends and classmates and people in my life, family and stuff like that, and doing readings for folks because I had the chance to grow up in a very spiritual and very open-minded environment towards those things. I mean, the witchcraft is still a little hard to swallow for my family, but they don't care about tarot and like tea leaf readings and stuff like that. And so I've always had people like believe in what I do apart from myself. So that always carried me through. But otherwise very much just delusion and being like, you know, I'm just going to tough it out. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing for a couple of months. And then if I still feel the same way, if I don't, you know, if nothing that I do succeeds and none of my spells work out, then I'll give up. And then it never happened. So test of time.
That idea that, okay, this is what I'm doing wrong, but that means there's something I can learn that is right. Holy shit. That's great.
Mm-hmm. It's a little backwards, but it made a lot of sense to me.
It makes sense to me. Like epiphany type. Good Lord. What brings you the most joy in your practice?
Nowadays, I would say it's probably like the relationship I've developed with my spirits. I've always considered my spirits to be my family. I kind of consider that they raised me a little bit. Just because I left home really, really early and was on my own very early on. And really struggled with family things and cut everyone off for a couple of years and all that fun runaway stuff. So my spirits really took a familial role for me and really carried me through a lot of things. And the same, I imagine in the same way that a lot of people's like faith for God carries them through a lot of things. My spirits have always been very present and vocal. Once I started being able to let them in and communicate with them more openly and receive like accept what they were saying, because they've always been talking. I feel like that's something that a lot of folks experience, where like everyone's always wondering, like, how do they hear their spirits? And they already hear them, but they can't really, they either don't allow them in, or they don't, they like push aside what they're hearing from them because they're thinking that, oh, well, it's not a crazy sign or anything like that. And that was very much me. And so, you know, little things here and there really make me happy whenever I get an omen, or whenever a specific animal related to a spirit I work with shows up, or when I, you know, will, sometimes I'll just go into my ritual room and I'll be like, guys, here's what's happening. Here's what I need. If y'all could come through, that'd be really, really great. Maybe shed a few tears, you know, tell them how I'm feeling. And then like things like magically fall into place, or like the right things happen at the right time. Like that to me is really beautiful. Beyond all of the sorcery and like the magic itself and the formulation and the business, I think that very much the relationship I've cultivated with my spirits is what I like the most.
That sounds lovely.
It's a good time. We have a lot of fun here. Me and my 14 spirits.
I am not there yet. Jag, 14.
Oh, it used to be more. I used to joke around and be like, sometimes a home is you, your 14 spirits, and your 3 cats. Yeah, I maintain a lot of different relationships on different levels with different spirits. But I mean, like, things incorporated very easily for me, which is I'm very lucky about. There's a lot of people that like will have a spirit take over, or, you know, multiple spirits that don't get along, so they have to keep them separate or anything like that. And I mean, I've had a couple of things like that, but generally speaking,
that sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of managing for sure. Yeah, it's you're running a household, a magical household on top of it. And so I was very lucky that everyone got along. Everyone was very nice. We're all good here. You know, we all have dinner. It's lovely.
What's something you did early on in your practice that you don't do anymore, and why don't you do it?
Casting a circle. I think that's like a big one. I think it's fallen out of favor in recent years from what I've seen. Back when I started, it was like, you gotta cast a circle. Even if you're just pulling some cards, you have to cast a circle. You have to protect yourself, this and that. And like, maybe like a year or two into my practice, I was like, this is tedious and annoying, and it does not do anything for me. You know, so I stopped doing it. I think that a lot of the time, if you're going to be doing ceremonial magic and you're going to be like delving into the Keys of Solomon, whether you're doing just like greater key stuff and just conjuring or consecrating pentacles and conjuring angels and stuff like that, or if you're doing like DSIC, like, of course, I think the circles are very important, especially when they invoke certain names or grant specific presences that are necessary for the ritual. You know, stuff like that, especially if you're going to be working with like more dangerous entities, they can be very helpful. Generally speaking, I'm very much, if you're going to do grimoire stuff, do it by the book, which includes the circles. But if you're doing folk magic, or if you're doing like witchcraft with a capital W and just like going into the woods and conjuring spirits, if you have the guidance and like the authority given to you by a spirit through initiation or through your relationship with them or anything like that, I don't think a circle is necessary, like very necessary, because you're already going there with someone's authority. I always talk about, you know, spirits standing at your back, because you show up, but then all of your ancestors show up, and all of your familiar spirits show up, and all of the gods and deities you work with show up, and you call on them, and it's, you welcome them into the ritual and into the space. And then it's you and an army of like thousands of ancestors, and then a bunch of spirits that have dominion over other spirits, and then you're conjuring one or two little shades, you know? So I think I've gone to a point where I'm able to do that. Of course, like, wear protection talismans, do all your protection stuff. Spirits can get crazy. But in terms of like having a circle to convoke and to protect yourself against spirits when conjuring them, I don't think it's necessary.
I don't practice traditional witchcraft, like with the capital T. But I like the idea that they aren't necessarily doing it for protection. They're doing it to create a liminal space. I've done that before, but since I ward the property and I ask the spirits that are already here to help me with that, I don't feel like I need to worry about it. Plus, I don't do ceremonial magic, so that's how I do it.
Yeah. No, the liminal space thing is definitely, I think it could definitely be a use for it, but also if you're practicing in your home and you're casting spells and creating wards and in relationship with spirits, you have spirits coming in and out all the time, you already are in a liminal space.
I don't do that in my house. I do that out in the garden. There's a specific place I do that.
Maybe that's a better idea than what I do.
I don't have room in my house for more things. Whether they're corporeal or not, I just don't have room. There's stuff in here taking up space. I can't always see it, but it's here.
Oh, that's so real. Every witch something has some shelves bending.
Right. Oh my gosh. If we were in my studio, I literally have, you know, those wire shelves that you can like put up these strips on the wall and they hold.
Oh yeah.
Brackets, the wire shelving. Mm-hmm. Full of jars full of herbs, and literally it bows in the middle, and I need to install another thing in the middle to hold it up. And it's crazy. Not because it's a pain in the ass, but
I've ruined every single closet I've ever
This used to be where my herbs were, but it's only like literally this big, and that's not enough now.
No.
So now I have an entire room. What's your favorite tool? It does not have to be a physical object. It can be a philosophy or an idea, whatever. Why is it your favorite and how do you use it?
I'm a big knife person. Very much. I have multiple blades that I use in my practice. I work with them as spirits themselves. And I use them for everything. I mean, I love I don't know where I heard it, but there's someone out there, another podcast, who was talking about blades and knives and stuff and was like, Wicca is all about, you know, you have an athame and you never use it. And it's just for ceremonial use and symbolism and all that. And traditional witchcraft is like, you need a knife. How are you going to cut things? You know, and I'm very much the second party. I use my knife for everything. I use my knife to carve candles, to collect plants, to protect my space, to banish spirits, to mix up certain oils that I do. Like if I'm doing like a protection oil or a cursing oil, I will be stirring it with my knife. You know, I go through multiple processes of honoring the spirit in it and blessing it. I'll anoint it with specific oils and then put it on the stove until it turns blue. Which good steel usually you can do that with. Because there's a belief that blue steel is good against spirits. And then I'll feed it with oils and tinctures and smokes and all that and prayer before using it. And yeah, honestly, if I'm leaving the house to do any sort of work, the knife is coming with me. Even if I need it, if I don't need it, it's always on me.
I didn't think about that, the blue with the knife, but it makes sense with haint blue and the blue bottles and all the other stuff that I see in folk magic. Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think I first encountered it in like a thing on Japanese folklore. Because they have like a whole bladesmithing spiritual thing going on. And that was a thing that was mentioned.
One of my friends is half Japanese, and she is sad that she doesn't speak Japanese or read it because she can only find Japanese literature about Japanese witchcraft and nothing that I can read, for example.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's why I'm a big proponent of like learning as many languages as you can. Because then you get to, like, you know, delve into other sources and not be stuck in the North American English
King James version of the Bible. Of, like,
yeah, you know, like, you're always hearing the same stuff, and everyone who speaks English, like, the occult world is so small that, like, if you only speak one language, you're very much limiting yourself to the opinion of maybe, like, 10 to 25 experts on the topic. And then you just gotta wait until more stuff comes out or come up with your own stuff if you want to do anything. So speaking other languages really gets you into new ideas. The same way that, you know, philosophy in other languages is usually illuminating.
I bet. Can you pick out one decision you've made that changed the direction of your life? And if so, what was it?
God, what did I do last week?
exactly.
Honestly, I'm a very, very intense person in my decisions. I've made a lot of very, very... I don't have any issues making hard decisions. I make them very quickly because I believe that any choice you make is the right choice. As long as you make one. So, you know, I moved out on my own when I was very young, in part because I felt like I needed to for the magic stuff. I started a business when I was very young at a very difficult time when I did not know anything about it. That definitely changed my life. You know, I have moved from province to province multiple times, since being on my own and, like, all across the place. That's all, everything changes your life. I don't know if there's anything, specific that I can pinpoint that really brought me to where I'm at now. But the business is a big one and the one that I'm very happy about every day. I'm very, very grateful that I chose to do this at the time that I did. Cause originally I was going to do the business when I was like 31, 32, you know, all that, once I'm settled and have money and, like, know what I'm doing and all that. But then
that doesn't happen.
The pandemic happened. You know, I got my nice little curb payment from the government. Thank you, Canada. And then I invested all of that into the business, and here we are.
Cool. That's nice. I can't believe COVID is, like, 4 years old.
Tell me about it.
Holy shit.
Jeez.
Speaking of which, how do you pull yourself out of a magical slump?
Ooh. Back in the day, I think, like, things have changed lately because my slumps are different than they used to be. Because they used to be, like, I had a slump and then I could kind of, like, stop doing magic and just, like, mind my business and then come back to it. But now if I don't do magic, my bills don't get paid. So, back in the day, I used to very much, like, delve into fantasy, fiction, and my, like, favorite comfort witchcraft movies and stuff like that, like Practical Magic and The Craft and Witches of Eastwick and, you know, all that fun stuff. And then I would basically go armchair for a little while and just do a lot of research into folklore and beliefs and reading, like, case studies and academic articles and stuff like that. And then eventually something would happen that I was like, well, this is a good use for magic. We should probably do it. I used to be very selective in, like, what I did magic for because I am a very independent person and I'm very much like, I can do it myself. I don't need intercession of anyone. And so I would, like, stubbornly just do things the mundane way, even though I knew that magic could help. Whereas nowadays I'm like, oh, there's traffic on the road to the city that I'm going to. Might as well do a little road opener. You know, so nowadays I'll usually do a big evil eye diagnostic, you know, do like a little egg limpia and see if there's anything on me. And then if there is, I'll get rid of that. I'll cleanse the house. I'll cleanse myself. I'll set up new protections and then I'll bless everything. I'll refresh all my offerings to spirits. I'll also do, like, look into, did I miss an offering to a spirit that I owed and that I forgot about? And now they're mad at me and blocking my roads. You know, anything like that. And then I'll make sure to do some divination to see if there's anyone throwing anything at me, or essentially, like, reset myself spiritually and then do something that I really enjoy related to magic. That's not necessarily like casting a spell or anything like that, but a lot of the time I'll procrastinate crafting a spirit vessel or reorganizing an altar, or I like making beautiful things. I'm like very artsy. And so sometimes I'll paint for a spirit or anything like that. And then that kind of gets me back on track and gets me back into the saddle.
I really like that idea. That had not occurred to me. To make things for them.
Yeah. Paint. I do pottery. So I make like spirit vessels and bowls and stuff like that that I dedicate to them. Or, you know, I love decor, so I reorganize an altar and buy new things for it. Painting, music, anything like that. Spirits love. Spirits love that kind of stuff. I think an offering of time is usually the best thing that you can do for a relationship with a spirit.
After Gem Show, I have things that I'm going to do now. That's cool. Thank you.
Are you going to the Tucson Gem Show?
Yeah, because I live in Tucson.
Oh, no way. That's amazing.
Yeah. I have a bunch of friends.
Yeah, Jeannie from Tides of Tethys is going to be there for the show, and she makes insanely beautiful talismanic jewelry.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a bunch of friends, witch friends, are coming here, so I'm going to show them the shows I like to go to and show them the shows that are more suited to their business that I don't go to because it doesn't match mine, but I'm still excited to go to look at rocks and eat right. A bunch of tacos.
I love gem shows. Oh, yeah.
I'm excited about the food. So excited. Can't wait.
In the same way, there's a food truck that parks outside of, like a rotating food truck that parks outside of the antique mall in Edmonton where I used to live. And we used to go like antique shopping just to have food.
Yes.
We'd walk around having like an ice cream float and being like, ooh, this bell is very old. And then just leave.
Yeah, when I travel, I always look at the restaurants and pick them out.
Oh, same. Mm-hmm. I do food tourism, absolutely.
Yes. My husband and I went on a trip from Colorado across the top of the U.S. I think we were on 70, and then down 95, and then back on 40 to hit all the big barbecue cities in the
you
U.S.
You did, like, the square? Nice. Yeah.
I love barbecue. I would love to do that.
Yeah.
And no, Nashville hot chicken. I mean,
the U.S. would be beautiful.
Don't do it in summer if you have a dog with you. Say that.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. It's too hot down there for my northern complexion.
What's something you wish was discussed more in the witch community?
Scams and frauds and impersonators and also, I don't know, what could I call it? The right to one's ideas. Being like a business in this sphere, and also like when you blog for a long time, you're always bound to have people who will like rip off what you say or what you do and then sell it as their own. Or a big thing that friends and I talk about a lot is as people whose craft is often perceived as being more authentic in air quotes, or more like intense for the camera, I guess. A lot of the time, a lot of our concepts or philosophies or ideas or things that our spirits will have showed us or taught us will be co-opted by people whose practices are a little on the less spirit involved side of things, like that is a little bit more new agey and a little more approachable, because of course like they are incorporating the same ideas and concepts, but then if they share it through their lens, it kind of reduces our ideas down and down and down through the audience and trickles down into something that it's not. Especially when it's something that's like spirit taught or, you know, or a methodology that you developed through mentorship. And then you'll see people take easy bits of it and then reposting it for like beginner witch tips on TikTok. And then that trickles down into just a mess, you know? So that can be very difficult to see. It's a natural part of things. I think that's always going to happen. I do wish that there was a little more openness about where you got ideas from or where you first encountered a concept, or if you're going to be inspiring yourself heavily off of like a sigil design or a talisman design or a prayer or poetry or anything like that, especially because a lot of witches and occultists are artists. I think there should be a lot more openness about referencing people and about working off of people's ideas and concepts, and then also having conversation with them, because like if I see someone using basically the same sentences that I wrote in a blog article 2 weeks ago to sell their new product that they came out with without them ever speaking to me, I will be offended. If it's like someone rude. Who came into my inbox and was like, hey, like, I really like what you're talking about, and like, I have these thoughts on it, and I thought that would be really applicable to my practice, and then we compare points and we have like a good conversation about it, then like, I don't care what you do with it because I know where you're coming from. But if I don't know you, then it comes off a little leechy.
Discourteous. How about just be courteous?
Exactly. Exactly. I think that for a community that recently online has been very vocal about building community and, you know, supporting creators and stuff like that, there's a lot of PvP happening in terms of co-opting ideas or spells or anything like that.
Yes, I agree. Consider your three biggest influences, not necessarily people, just things that have influenced your practice, like philosophies, ideas, kind of like the tool question, except the three biggest influences on your practice. What would you thank them? Who or what are they, and how would you thank them? What are you thanking them for?
That's a really good question. I think for me, I consider myself an artist before I consider myself a witch. And so in terms of influences, definitely medieval and early modern and Renaissance art, and the themes that came through Baroque and Raphaelite art and music, and themes of religion as it intermingles with art, and heresy and mysticism, and just the lived experience of art through spirituality and spirituality through art, I think would be one. And in terms of how I would think that one, I guess I incorporate it into what I do as much as possible. You know, making devotional art and always learning about things and educating myself constantly on the things that I'm passionate about and incorporating them into my practice beyond just being someone who admires it or someone who consumes it, really try to take lessons from it and try to extrapolate meaning from the art with which I interact. And then another big influence would probably be my matrilineal line, like my mother and my grandmother and my step grandma and all that. I come from a family of very strong, very, very wise women, but wise through experience. I'm lucky that the women in my life are very handy and never let themselves kind of be strapped down by anyone's ideals or conceived notions of them. Very strong-headed and very loud and opinionated and successful and artistic and passionate. who were always very open-minded and very, very encouraging in everything that I did, whether that's through art or through spirituality or through magic or anything like that. So that's definitely a big influence on me, especially because my mother literally was like, in this house, we pray to rocks. Here's how to pray to rocks. It was very, was a very good guiding hand in those things. We had a little back and forth when I first started doing magic, where she was like, you're not going to burn 28 candles in my living room. And we had a lot of arguments about that. But apart from that, you know, I really appreciate the way that I was raised and all of that, and given the tools to do what I do, especially because, like, my family is, like, we're all entrepreneurs. So I grew up in businesses and around business, and I have, like, 6 fucking financial advisors that I can go to at all times and being like, how do I market this product? I have no idea. And everyone can help, which is amazing. So yeah. And then magically, I would say, like, the North American current of folk magic. I don't talk about it too much because there's a whole conversation to be had of nuance in collaboration, inspiration, appropriation, and all of the things regarding that. But when I first started out, my book of, like, cantrips is what I like to call it, is Judica Isles' Encyclopedia of 1000 Spells, which at the time I assumed was just, like, witchcraft. When in reality, it is a book of hoodoo. You know, it's very much based on Southern American conjure, Southern American, American, like the United States, of conjure and hoodoo and practices that are very much based in the Bible Belt and stuff like that. And so I still carry a lot of that influence through to this day in terms of how I set up spells and how I work with plants and herbs, and the language that I use, especially in terms of if we're talking about road opening, if we're talking about crown of success, fast luck, like all of those things are things that originated in practices from the south of the United States. And so that's a very big influence that I like to honor and respect. Yeah. I would say those are the three.
I like those, and I'm glad that I have new things to ponder for the rest of the week. What advice do you have for a new witch?
Research. Just research. Give up on Llewellyn and Wiser and Three Hands Press and all of the books, the big witchcraft books that you're looking into. Those are fun to read. Those are really great once you've established a practice and once you have an idea of what they're talking about, especially if we're talking about Three Hands Press, because God knows they have a thesaurus on deck. But, you know, scholar.google.com is a great place. Read academic articles, research folklore, folk beliefs, popular medicine, research witchcraft trials, and research the politics of witchcraft throughout history, not just in the modern days, but also in the early modern era, and in Iceland during, you know, the quote-unquote burning times, which, very strange subject. You know, research your family's history as well, and where you come from, and your ancestry and their beliefs and their belief systems and how those things evolved through religion and with religion and against religion. Read up on philosophy of magic. What, you know, there's a lot of our philosophy of magic comes from the Middle East and, you know, medieval texts from that era, or from the Egyptians, and a lot of our astrology comes from the Mesopotamians and Babylonians and Egyptians. So research history and the evolution of magic and religion and spirituality and its effect on culture and anthropology through the years. Ethnographies are great to look into. All of those things. I think if you're going to be a witch, if you want to be the best witch you can be, you also have to be an academic a little bit. The subject is so much more complicated and so much more complex than casting spells and getting what you want. You're working within a legacy of beliefs and cultures and practices from the world over that were distilled into this very moment that allowed you to do those things. So always respect the people who came before you and the cultures things came from, and make sure that your ideas are solid.
That's the sound bite.
Very passionate
about
that.
That's beautiful. So now that you've seen and answered these questions, who do you think would be interesting to also have answered these questions? Who should I invite on the show?
Oh, that is a great question. The folks over at the Frightful Hallows You May Hear are very, very good friends of mine and also very strong influences on my practice and just incredible people as well as incredible practitioners. If you want to talk to scholars of magic, hit them up. They're incredible. And their knowledge is honestly, I'm someone who talks a lot. When I'm around them, I shut the hell up. I just absorb. They're very nice. Otherwise, Sasha Ravitch is amazing as well in the astrology department and in the bridging of witchcraft and magic. And astrology, really like her work. I really like Manticore's Den as well, who practices some very interesting Thai things. Oh god, am I blanking on her name? Ivy.Senna on Instagram is a good friend of mine as well, and she has been doing a lot of really, really amazing things with Pollux, the fixed star Pollux in Gemini, and she's also published a beautiful pamphlet through Hadean Press called Venus as Mother that I really enjoyed. I think she would be super interesting to talk to, especially because if I'm not wrong, she is currently doing either a master's or a PhD in economics as a practicing witch, and that's very, very interesting. She's amazing to talk to. Yeah, I think that's like those are my big suggestions that I have coming to mind.
I have to take a picture of what I wrote down because I always forget and erase. It's dry erase, so I
oh yeah, yeah,
compulsively erase it. So I have to take a picture.
Honestly, a throwaway notebook has like saved my life. I buy like the cheapest notebook I find and I just like write everything that I need in it, and then it's changed everything for me.
I can't. I feel bad about throwing things away. Yeah, bitch is a hoarder. So
I still keep them, even if it's in the name.
I have so much shit. There's so much shit. I can't.
You know, I've been looking into
remove it.
Because, like, I'm, like, a big notes person, and I'm always, like, taking, like, 100 notes and, like, making lists. And I, like, everything that I do, I, like, critique myself on. So, like, I write everything down. But I was thinking of getting, like, a Remarkable thingy thing. I don't, is it a tablet?
I think I've heard of that.
But, like, I like the idea that, like, you can write on it and, like, make PDFs and then just, like, upload them.
Google yes. Drive
and they're just there. Yes. So it's like a digital notebook that you can actually write in. I really
badass.
Like, without it being like, I have ADHD, so if you give me anything that has apps on it or anything else other than the thing that I need to get done, I'm not doing that thing.
Then you're so off like on the game and Instagram and Facebook and everything else.
Marco exactly. Polo. You know, running a business, you've always got something to check. Emails, yep. Instagram, Patreon, you know, everything.
Yes.
always a notification somewhere.
Is there anything else you wanted to bring up or any questions that you had for me?
Yeah. Well, I just released a collection for the Fixed Star Vega that I think I would love to kind of advertise and get out there a little bit more. At the time of recording, I'm not sure when this is going up. And yeah, if you guys are interested in what I do, or if there's any questions that you have about anything that I said, or if you'd like to book some spell work or divination, anything like that, it's instagram.com/kitchentoad. You can email me also at mahigaxn@outlook.com is my name with an X because it was taken. And yeah, I'm also on Patreon. I do community rituals each and every single month for the Hawthorne tiers. So if you guys are interested in that, you can check that out. Yeah. That's about what I've got.
Links will be in the show notes. Make sure you check show notes either on Spotify or Apple or my website, wherever. They will be available. So the last two things I ask of every guest. Thing number one, recommend something to the listeners. It does not have to be witchy. Whatever you are super into right now, recommend something.
I would recommend The Rules of Magic by Alice Hoffman. Just because I started listening to it again the other day as an audiobook. And it's honestly, like, Practical Magic is good. Rules of Magic is excellent. If you want, like, a novel that's really in, like, it really encapsulates, I think, the experience of being a witch in the modern age. Even though, like, it's set in the 60s and stuff, but, you know, same old, between the life upheavals and the troubles that magic bring into your life and, you know, doing things that you shouldn't, and also the complications of being queer in spaces that are difficult to exist within, or love as a witch, and all those things, and just magical realism. I think she really nailed it on the head. I don't know if Miss Hoffman herself is a witch, but I think she really got it right in the way that life often tends to happen to people on this path. You're always going to be kind of set apart and a little different from other people because of what you believe in and what you do and the lifestyle that you choose. And that leads to a lot of the adventures that the Owen siblings experience, in my experience. So, great book.
Along that same line, I'm going to recommend my friend's podcast. I don't remember what the answer to the question was, but they interviewed Alice Hoffman on their podcast, the Magnolia Street podcast. I don't remember if she said yes or no, but they talked to her. So check that out.
I will be listening to that later.
The last thing that I ask of guests is, please tell me a story.
Ooh, what kind of story are you in the market for?
Either something goofy that happened to you, or something exciting that happened to you, or just a story that you like to tell, whether it is folklore or whatever. Don't tell me some sort of, please don't tell me something from a reality TV show.
Oh, God. So on last week's episode of The Bachelor,
on Farmer Wants a Wife, or I'm watching MILF Manor because Witch Bitch Amateur Hour,
such a good one.
Witch Bitch Amateur Hour is doing a special series on them in their Patreon. I want to die.
Oh God, a story I like to tell. This is when I realized that I don't tell many stories. I can tell you the story about the first time that I, like, remember seeing a spirit very vividly and having, like, a very strange, like, ooh, experience.
Yes.
So, to set the context, I used to live in a military base, like a defunct military base. about, I'd say, 25 minutes away from this town named Sept-Îles, which is like the commercial metropolitan of northern Quebec, and with a booming population of 20,000 people at the time. And so, you know, we lived in a very, it was very dark. There was like no street lights or like anything like that, except for like one. And then there was like a big gate that led into the base that was just like a residential neighborhood, at that point. And so I think I was maybe seven or eight, very young. And, we were driving down. It was late. I think my mom had just picked me up from my sister's house because she was taking care of me for a bit. We were driving home. I think it was probably like 10 or 11 or something like that. And I'm half asleep. I'm in the back of the car, just like dozing off. And we are pulling up around this one bend. And I just want to set the scene. Like, there are no lights. We're on a single little dirt road. And there's pine trees that are probably like 20 feet high on both sides. There's, you can't see anything. There wasn't even a moon in the sky. Like, it was just so stupid dark. So it's headlights and a dirt road. And we're coming around this bend that's known to be very dangerous, because there's, the way that it was done was like, you couldn't really see if another car was coming, during the day. So lots of crashes and stuff like that. Just a very liminal, scary space. And we're turning this bend, and then all of a sudden, I just like screech, because I'm convinced that we're about to hit this man. Like, not a car, like a man that's like running across the road wearing this, like, not quite a cowboy hat, but like kind of a cowboy hat. And this like fringe coat, like leather, brown tan leather coat, and these baggy jeans. And he has like this big black beard. And my mom like stops the car, like halts it, and we're like skidding a little bit. And then we finally like stop. And then obviously she's freaking out. She's yelling at me. But I, you know, I'm not listening whatsoever, because there's a man at my window. And so So there's like this man at the window, and I'm obviously like kind of freaked out, but also I think that like a common experience when you see a spirit is that like, you're not afraid necessarily. You're kind of just confused. Even if like, if you think it's real, you should be afraid, but like, you're kind of just like, something feels off. So you're like, not sure how to feel. That's kind of how I remember feeling. And this man like comes up to the window and like speaks to me. The window's closed, by the way. Like, there's no way I would have like heard anyone talk, but it was like clear as day. And I remember his face, and I remember everything that he looked like. And my mom was like, what are you like looking at? What are you screaming at? And I described to her like this man who's at the window and what he's telling me. And she starts crying, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, even as a kid, I was like, what? This is so weird. And then we just like drive off and we go home. And like, a couple of days later, I came to find out my mom was married, to a man named Philip before I was born. And he died, 2 years and a day before the day I was born. So she was widowed, and he died from a heart attack in the woods. Like, he went out, I think, to check on traps or something like that, because we've always lived very rurally. He was checking on traps or something like that, and he took the dog with him, and he never came back. And then they essentially found him dead of a heart attack in the middle of the woods in the winter. And the dog was just like barking and yelling and stuff. Very tragic. But I didn't know any of that when that happened. And then she like a couple of days later, like took out a photo and like showed me him. And it was like exactly like, that was him. Like, I saw Philip. And yeah, that's like a big story that like, even she'll tell people. And yeah, I mean, she's always said that like he looked over us and like stuck with us. And like we could see his shadows on the walls and like looking over us and stuff like that. Cause he was a very good man from what I hear. And as I got into witchcraft and stuff like that, he's actually become a very integral part of my practice, as an ancestor that I work with. And so when I was getting into things, obviously like he was like my mother's, like that was like the love of her life. So she kept a bunch of stuff of his all the time, in this like trunk that she used to keep. And this one time I woke up from a dream where like Philip was essentially telling me like, go to this place in the closet, in this box, in this other box that's in it, and you're going to find this thing. And I did it and I found his knives that used to belong to him. And then those are the knives that I use. Like when I said that, like my blades are very important to me, like that's why. I have two blades that were given from him, and then I have another that was selected by a spirit, for a specific thing. But, those carry him through in my practice. And I have like his old cigarette tin that he used to fill with rollies, that I used to like put his offerings in. And I light candles to him every November 28th. Cause that's the date that he passed. So that's like, yeah, that's like a big one that I always like telling people. Yeah. A good guy. We like him a lot over here.
That's amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for listening. I know I ramble a lot. So,
did you get in trouble for rummaging through her closet? And then you have to say, yeah, but he said to.
Nah, I told her what happened and she was like cool with it.
Fly at my house.
My mom's a very spiritual person as well. She, like, for as long as I remember, she's always paid attention to her dreams. My mom has like the same dream every time someone's about to die around her. It's like very accurate. It's like kind of scary accurate. And so it's happened multiple times where she's had the dream and then she'll like drive like 10 hours to the house of the person who she saw. And then like stay with them all day to make sure that no one gets hurt. And they usually get hurt, but at least they don't die. So you win some, you lose some, you know? Yeah, we're a
cookie
bunch.
That would stress me out so much. I gotta go to Florida.
Yeah, thankfully everyone lives, well, mostly everyone lives in Canada, so it's not too bad. We're all in Eastern Canada somewhere.
Oh man, that would stress me out.
Yeah, it's been a while, thankfully. It's been a while. But yeah, I could go on. Honestly, my family's got so much weird stuff happening. My sister's dad lives in her house and he's been dead for 20 years. You know, just things like that. Good old rural folk tales.
Well, thank you again for being on the show. And everybody be sure to go check out the show notes to get links to follow Mahigan on Instagram and everywhere else. And I'll see you over on Instagram. Bye.
See ya.
Mahigan, welcome to Hive House.
Hello.
Can you please tell me what your favorite quote is?
Yeah. So that is one of the questions that when I saw it on the list, I was a little anxious because I don't remember any like big quotes that I really
along
refer
with,
to.
A few other friends.
But one
of ours
came to mind.
Something that my grandma used to
and
say.
We essentially had 10 days of partying and drinking and doing magic throughout the whole thing. And so it was like every night. It was like, you know that meme of Lady Gaga who that's like bus, club, flight, another club. It was that, but instead we were like tarot, ritual, going into the woods, restaurant, drink. And it was just like a crazy, crazy time. And we were all just cackling and laughing the whole time. We did not sleep, did not close our eyes once.